Welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm Danny Yamashiro. Welcome to The Good Life. We are here to help unleash your God-given purpose. A man and his children. Men and sex. The voice of the heart for a man. Our guest today speaks to the deepest yearnings of a man's heart. What about homelessness? Did you know that homelessness is one of the significant problems in society for any community? But there are solutions to homelessness. We have a special guest to speak especially on that subject as well. Today we're doing something special. We're going to take it back to the Hawaiian Islands Ministries 2011 conference at the Hawaii Convention Center, where I featured two special guests, Mark Alexander and Jeff Schulte. Jeff Schulte is first, and we're going to take you straight there to a special recording where Jeff spoke about men and sex and men as fathers. You know, the reason we have this show is to bring you closer and closer to the Lord. So take some time, take this in. Jeff Schulte and Mark Alexander. Here's Jeff Schulte up first. Welcome back to our show. You know, one of the finest conferences in the world is right here in our Hawaii, right here at the Hawaii Convention Center, Hawaiian Islands Ministries. And one of the great blessings is that we have world-class communicators that come, and we're able to have them, and like today, we're able to have them right here on air. And in this segment, we have a very special guest named Jeff Schulte. A man and his children. Men and sex. I think some ears got perked up there, Jeff. The voice of the heart. Those are some of the special topics that come right out of the heart of Jeff Schulte, who speaks about some of these deepest yearnings in a man's heart. Jeff is the executive director and a fellow at the Sage Hill Institute, an initiative for authentic Christian leadership. He speaks nationally and internationally on a variety of issues, including biblical masculinity, fatherhood, spiritual formation, leadership, and relational authenticity. Prior to this, Jeff was the directional leader and co-founder of a church with international reach that grew from 4 people to more than 4,000 in 8 years. He is a co-author of 2 gold medallion award-winning resources, including Preparing for Marriage. He received both his THM and MDiv degrees from Western Seminary. He's a graduate of Yale University, where he majored in organizational behavior. Jeff serves on several boards of national ministries, including Hawaiian Islands Ministries. He resides in Anchorage, Alaska, with his wife of 24 years. He's a father of 6. Jeff, welcome. Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Danny. It's good to be here.
Jeff, you know, time is of the essence. Yeah. And
listen, by the way, I saw you blush when you were mentioning some of my sermon thoughts.
Thanks for revealing that.
they can only hear us. They can't see us. Yeah, and I thought, boy, he turned red when he said that.
Boy,
I love it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I love it.
give us some quick highlights, about the importance. What's important about a man and his children?
Let me jump there, but let me just say this. Can I say something first before we go there? I'm so appreciative of you doing this, even from this location today. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, which in some ways is very similar to Hawaii in that you refer to the mainland. We refer to them as the Lower 48.
Okay.
But we're not an island, but we're pretty out there on our own. Mm-hmm. And when I come here, I'm amazed, because we don't have anything like this in Alaska, but I'm amazed that there's an opportunity here in Hawaii for one weekend where so many authors, speakers, Christian musicians, gifted people can come to one place, and that we can come and walk out of here encouraged, refreshed, more creative, more inspired. Mm-hmm. I've been doing these now for at least, I think, probably 10 years, and now I'm on the board with HIM. And the reason I keep coming back is because there's something very unique that does happen here in Hawaii every year. Now, you could say, well, you live in Alaska. Of course, you keep coming back to Hawaii. Yeah. But, no, I come back because something special happens in this convention center every year.
Yeah.
It is one of the most diverse economically, denominationally, socioeconomically, racially places I've ever been mm-hmm. for ministry. Mm-hmm. And those that are here know what I'm talking about. And I love that you're actually interviewing and broadcasting from here and getting to talk a little bit about what's happening. So I'm grateful for that. I talked this morning about Men and His Children, and mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that I told a story to the guys, and you know, there's a lot of specifics we could go into. You know, you think about what your kids need when they leave the house. I've got six myself. You know, I've got a 20-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, 11-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And you know, you try to give your kids what you think they'll need to be successful spiritually, personally, relationally. And probably the best way I summed it up for these guys was. It was a real clarifying moment for me a year and a half ago when I dropped off my first daughter to college. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing in the parking lot with her, and I'm having one of these moments like, oh, my gosh, you know, does she have what she needs? She can balance her checkbook. You know, she's a beautiful girl. Does she know how to fend off these guys that are going to come at her like vultures? Mm-hmm. You know, how's she going to do academically? Does she know how to study all that? And, you know, I was standing with her in this parking lot getting ready to watch her leave. And as a little backdrop, one of the things I'd always done with my kids is when I put them to bed at night, I would physically touch them and pray for them, and sometimes just sing a little blessing, like, you know, the Lord bless you and keep you, mm-hmm. the Lord make His face. And I'd just sing this blessing over them, and I've done that since they were small. So I'm standing there in this parking lot, and I got my 18-year-old daughter in my arms, and I'm just bawling.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my hand on her head, and I just started singing that over her as I was getting ready to say goodbye. And I put her head in my hands, or her face in my hands. I looked at her, and I said, Jenna Ray, I said, you don't have to pity me with these tears. You don't have to take care of me. You know, I'm not falling apart. These are tears of great pride and joy about you, the woman you become, the life you're walking into, and my confidence in what, mm-hmm. you know, who you become. And I said, so that's what these tears are. And blessed her, and she walked away. And as she was walking away, I'm standing there just crying my eyes out, and I'm kind of watching her, you know, like I'm all the way watching her until mm-hmm, she gets out mm-hmm, of sight. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that as I'm watching her leave, not once did she turn around and look back to find me. She just turned and walked away into her life.
Mm.
And, you know, the part of me thinks, oh, I want her to turn back. Are they still there? Is my dad still there?
Yeah.
And then it struck me that I was grateful she didn't look back, because she had what she needed, which was this. She knew she didn't have to look back to know if I was there. She knew I was there. She knew that her mom and I deeply loved her. We'd always deeply love her. And if she ever needed us, and she does, and we still relate a lot. But I'm just saying, there was something symbolic about that moment where she could walk into her life with confidence, knowing one thing. She was absolutely loved.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought about that. I thought, you know, all the things I think she needs, even this, Danny, even that I would think that she needs, obviously, a relationship with God, or, you know, a lot of practical things around that. But I thought, well, hold on a second. If she can fully grasp the depth of this Father for her and mother, that gives her the capacity in some ways to more fully grasp the love that a Father in heaven has for her. And so if I had one thing to give her, that would be it. And it sounds so simple, and there's a lot of specifics I went through in my session, but in the end, I said, in the end, if my kids said one thing about me on a deathbed, it would be this. One word about me, it'd be the word presence.
Mm.
That I was there, and they knew they were loved by me.
Mm.
And then I tied that into Matthew 3, where Jesus, beginning of his 3-year road to the cross, you know, he had a Father in heaven that absolutely knew him, that he was fully God and yet fully man. And walking into the hardest 3 years of his earthly life, which would end up in a garden, where he would be saying, Father, if there's another way, let's do it another way. And then saying, but your will be done, and went to a cross on our behalf. But the gift that that father gave that son was a public statement that was, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. So he said publicly, you're mine, and I'm pleased with you. And by the way, at that point, Jesus hadn't healed anyone. He hadn't performed any miracles. He hadn't preached any great messages. He was just beginning. And so not tied to performance, not tied to anything that son had done, that father who knew his son and knew what his son would need for all he was walking into with his life gave him the gift of, you're mine, and I'm pleased with you.
Mm. You know, we talk about love and how much we need it, how much we long for it. Sometimes men can get confused when it comes to love and sex.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about men and sex. Okay. I know that's one of your topics also here in this this conference, but speak to us about that.
That's probably, I'll do three sessions here, and that one's tonight. I'm pretty excited about that one.
You're going to be packed out, huh?
We'll see. Just as long as this guy's show. But, you know, the bottom line for guys would be this. You know, I think sex is the answer for a lot of guys to a lot of things.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's probably as many women listening to this program as there are men right now, so I'm turning red right now. But, you know, if I stand in front of a group of guys tonight and I say, you know, if you're bored, sex will do. If you can't sleep, sex will do. If you're insecure and want to be affirmed, sex will do. I could go all the way through the different needs. If you're lonely, sex will do. I mean, all the way through, if I talk about even some of the emotional needs of a man, in the end, men a lot of times will look and say, sex answers a lot of that for me. Okay? And a lot of times they're looking to have those questions answered about themselves with a woman. And what I'm going to teach tonight is I'm going to pull back a little bit and go back to the book of Genesis. And here's the question I would have. Before Eve was made, was that man in the garden any less of a man before she was made? In other words, did he become more of a man after God made Eve? The question is no. In fact, what happened in the garden, God gave that man a work to do and a will to obey. He said, you tend this garden, and I am in charge here. Don't eat from that tree. And then he brings the woman along as a strong helper to say, an equal with you, a helper in that way, a helpmate, the word is, to help you obey the will and do the work, because you can't do it alone. So together, you'll be better. Okay. Now, what happens is that man brings his full masculinity, fully made in the image of God as a man, and he has a chance to express that masculinity with the woman. So here's the problem. When men are out there trying to find themselves, when I talk about sexuality, I'm saying in a masculine sense, sexuality I'll speak for a man, is a man being comfortable in a man's skin. It doesn't have to do with sex. Now, it could result in the expression of sex, but sexuality is a man being comfortable in a man's skin.
Mm-hmm.
When a man is trying to get that question answered from a woman, okay, he's sucking through a straw. And the woman's going to feel taken from. She's going to feel used because he's using her. He's using her to answer questions about himself that she can't answer. So the real question is, where does a man find his sexuality? And I'd back up and say ultimately the bigger need around his man's skin would be this. It's affirmation and confirmation. This is what I am a man. This is what a man is. I'm comfortable with that. And this is how I'm doing in that man's skin. This is how I'm living out that masculinity. Well, a woman can't answer that question for a man. Not fully. A man answers that question for a man. And a man in community with other men answers those questions.
How do men do it? How do you do it?
Well, let me ask you this. What's the question most men are asking in any relationship, male or female? What's the unspoken question? It's what I just said. It's am I okay and how am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Affirmation.
Yes, and in the context of that, he's assuming that if you really knew who I really was, you would know I'm a fraud, you'd know how I act together, you know I'm broken. And so I'm working real hard at all times, in all situations, to make sure that people around me think and know that I have my act together so that you won't leave me, you won't reject me, you won't judge me.
Mm-hmm.
So in that context, we're all posers, we're all pretenders, we're all manipulators,
mm-hmm.
we're all hiding. You know, I use this example all the time with guys. I say, look, if you're sitting around a table and we're all playing cards, I said, let's just say relationally playing cards. I said, there's two hands that we're playing. There's the hand that we show and the hand that we hold. But which hand is really playing the game? The one we're showing or the one we're holding? The one we're protecting? The one we're not telling about? The cards that I won't let you see because I think if you saw them, okay, you'd leave me because you'd see that I'm not enough.
Mm.
Okay, here's how it happens. It happens when men with other men start playing their cards. And when I start playing my cards with you, and I mean being honest about what I'm playing, okay, and then I start finding out that you don't not only don't leave, like you move toward me because you find out that I'm human like you're human and I'm in need of God like you're in need of God, then men start becoming comfortable with one another. And then they start experiencing some of the truth of James 5 and the places where when they're actually honest with one another, there's healing in their life, there's intimacy because they're actually intimacy, there's actually that I'm able to let someone see me and they don't leave me.
That's good.
And then what happens is as I begin to grow more comfortable with the way God made me, listen, not bucking up like a cowboy, but the way God made me as a needing, longing, feeling human being that was made to live with God and is dying apart from Him, okay? When I'm comfortable and I start growing in the depth of that understanding, then actually I have something to bring to a woman. And then when I get to the whole issue of men and sex, I actually have a way then now where I can express who I am as a man with that woman in a way that actually loves her, cares for her, and gives to her, which then meets some of her greatest need for security and care and love. And a woman knows when a guy's taken from her. She knows it. And most guys are taken from women because most guys are looking for women to give them answers that only men can give them. That's why David could say about Jonathan. He said, that's a friend. The love of that man is sweeter than a woman. He's saying, there's something a man can give me that a woman can't. And when men don't get that from men, they have nothing to give to women. They have nothing to give to women. And so what they're doing is when they're sucking through that straw, that's creating context for addiction, for compulsive behavior, because like anything else, when you're sucking through a straw like that, you come away more empty than when you started. It satisfies for a moment, but then leaves you emptier on the back end and creates this sense of compulsion and addiction and repetitive behavior, and guys find themselves spinning out of control. When I say guys, I'm not talking about guys. I mean, I've experienced that. I don't know a guy that hasn't at some level wrestled with these deep issues.
Yes.
So one of the things that I do, and I'll do in the session tonight, but even when I do this kind of ministry with the Sachel Institute, is I try to create contexts where men can learn how to be men with men. And I don't mean in a macho, bravo, pretend, stupid, bucket-up, self-willed way. I'm talking about where guys start learning how to speak the truth about themselves in the presence of other people who won't leave them. You know, Jesus said, unless you become like a child, you won't experience the kingdom. Here's the question, Danny. How's a child different from that? From those 10 adults that are just walking by this table right here, right now? Here's the difference. A child feels healthy shame about their need. You know, if a little baby walked in here in front of us, a little two-year-old walked in here, they could have a dirty diaper, food hanging off their mouth, hair be messed up, okay, pooping, burping, and you know what? They would dance in the middle of this floor, and they would have an expectation that we would delight in them and that we'd love them. And you know what? They would have to perform for it. They wouldn't have to please for it. They wouldn't have to act for it. They'd just be themselves. Baby comes out of the womb in all their nakedness saying, here I am, what do you think of me? And the expectation is, I'm going to delight in you, and I'm going to care for you and take care of you. So to become like a child is to learn again, listen, to learn again how to find myself in a place where I don't shame my need, I don't perform and pretend, I don't have to manipulate and cover, live in denial and self-defense, but I can learn how to let my guard down and say, I am a human being made in the image of God, in great need of God, and in great need of you. And as I grow more comfortable in those places, I begin not only to experience intimacy with you, intimacy with myself, because I know what's going on inside me, but then I'm in a place where I can experience intimacy with a God that made me. You know, and so that's what I'll talk a little bit about tonight. But truth, it's what I talk a lot about with guys everywhere that I go. And I think a lot of guys, I watch it, man, guys are ready.
How do they respond?
Oh, my gosh, they come unglued. Because what happens is...
I mean, you're touching the deep nerve.
That's it. And I would say, guys, I've watched this all over the country. You know, guys will gather. Guys will gather for coffee and donuts a couple times. But unless you're talking about stuff that really matters to a guy, and I mean where someone is actually talking about the deeper questions and issues they're facing, okay, guys will move on. You know, let me give you a great example. I feel some fear even sharing this. But let me give you a great, well, yeah, I'll go ahead and do this. So I get a text message. This is how guys learn how to be together. And then trust a God that cares about it. So I get a text message from a buddy of mine a while back, and he says, he's at a volleyball game. This is I wish this was not a mixed audience, but I'm going to tell the story anyhow and risk that you're going to get thrown off the air. I get a text message from a good friend. He says,
thanks a lot, Jeff.
He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm at this volleyball game, this high school volleyball game. And he said, God, I hate these uniforms. He said, I hate these girls' uniforms. I texted him back, and I said, brother, I love them, but I'd go to jail, and it's not good for me. You see the difference in honesty? Here's the thing. I hate that I love them, but the truth is, I love them. And if God didn't care about it, my wife didn't care about it, I could get away with it, and I could be alone in that gymnasium watching that game with no one distracting me. The truth is, I'd be all over that. But see, I bring that honesty to God, and he says, God, I knew that the whole time. Yeah, you're looking for something, Jeff, but you're going to find it there. You're going to find it with me. You're going to find it with intimacy with some brothers. You're going to find it with your wife. But be honest with me about what you're longing for. Mm-hmm. Be honest with me about what tempts you, what struggles that you have. Like, tell the real truth. You don't hate that. You love it, but you hate that you love it. But see, it's that level of honesty that brings us to a God that says, and I see all that, and I care, and I love you, but I knew that the whole time. Bring that to me and trust that I can work with you. Like grieve that, but that's how I'll change you. You don't have to go change yourself. Let me change you, but you bring your honest heart to me. And I just have found, whether it's in small groups or even if tonight's going to be in a larger group, but when you start talking that honestly with guys, they're so hungry for something real and authentic because they're tired of playing. I mean, I was a pastor of a blown up church and, got a couple seminary degrees. I'm not a Bible phobe. I don't know the whole thing, but I have some sense of the theological context for the scriptures. I know the Bible fairly well, but I did this other thing for 20-some years and worked real hard to try to walk with God, worked real hard to try to be intimate with him, worked real hard, worked real hard. And I got tired. And I think it wasn't until I got so tired that I personally melted down and broke down and wanted to quit everything that I finally said, this can't be how you walk with God. This is too hard of work trying to stay good enough for him. Now, my theology was correct, but I'm saying internally I was still performing. Sure. It's too much work to stay good enough for him and good enough for these guys that won't leave me, friends that were friends, but the whole time I'm trying to, make sure I'm okay. And this is really funny, but my friends always laugh when I talk about this, that the irony is that most non-Christian guys are able to be more honest with themselves than Christian guys with each other.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that too.
Yeah. You walk into the church and all of a sudden you have to start lying about yourself. When that's probably the one place on the planet where we're given permission to actually be ourselves because the gospel tells us that we can be ourselves and we're still loved. And yet somehow when we walk in there, we sort of put on clean clothes and we can stop telling the truth and we can stop being honest about ourselves.
Well, I think...
Well, you're hitting... This is a nerve for me, but yeah.
Well, Jeff, that's part of the weirdness of what goes on in church. It's the what it's supposed to be and what it really is and how we put up the facade and we play the game too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And how much harder is it for leaders?
Oh, it's exponential.
It's prison. Because the minute that the leader starts talking about his humanity, he's wondering a lot of things. I mean, am I going to be unemployed tomorrow? I mean, he's scared spitless to tell the truth about his life, which actually sets him up for greater failure down the road.
Even more.
Even more. And that's why, typically I'll go do a men's deal and I'll do something with churches or I'll do a men's weekend or something. And the guys that are pulling me aside, like sort of going to, Nicodemus at night, that are kind of having these private conversations,
sure.
It's the elders and the pastors, and they're looking at me, because I'll tell a lot about my own story, I'm pretty honest. And these guys are pulling me aside going, can I talk to you? Because they, I'll tell you, we do live in secret, and we do live in the dark, but it kills a man to live in secret, live in the dark. Because the performance of that it just wears out over time.
And even the fact that they share it, when they do, it must be such a release for them.
Oh, yeah.
A weight lifted, for them to have shared it, one, and then to have it embraced. And then for someone to tell them, that's why they shared it, because they feel safe anyway.
Yes.
Somebody to tell them, hey, you're not the only one,
Well, think about this.
You're not abnormal. I mean, you're normal and maybe more normal because you're authentic.
That's right.
And God is pleased with that. He can work with that. How can he work with a fake?
Yes.
It's all a sham.
When I shared that story, and again, a woman might listen to that story different than a guy would, but when I shared that story about my friend's text message, I actually physically would watch you move and lean toward me. Your response to that was not like, oh, God, I'm sitting here on the radio with a pervert. Your response was, God, that's honest. Really... And, almost like there was a draw to that. I just feel it, okay? And guys do that. I can sense guys coming near. But here's the question I would say to you, and I'd point this out to them. If Jesus lives in you, and he does, and I'm bringing my need to you, which is my humanity and my confession of my need of God at a deep, deep part in my heart, and you find yourself moving toward me, who's moving toward me? It's Christ in you who's moving toward me, and he's bringing you with him. You know, in that moment, I'm the woman in Luke 7 that Jesus said, I see this woman, and I see her need. And I have a huge confidence that I can bring my need to God, and he does not run from me, but he moves toward me. And so in that sense, you being the body of Christ, Danny, you're a piece of that body. I really do. There's some, and I've had this happen in my life, some of the most hurtful things that have ever happened to me have had to do with being rejected around stuff where I brought some to somebody, and they didn't know what to do with it. So either they did nothing, which hurt, or they rejected me, which hurt. But I've also experienced some of my most beautiful moments when, and again, I'm growing in my confidence of this, where I know that the Lord moves toward need. You know, blessed are those who thirst, for they'll be satisfied. Blessed are those who mourn, for they'll be comforted. When I bring my need to God, he rushes toward me in that. The only people he had, not say the only, the two people in the New Testament he had the hardest time with, two groups of people, okay, that he was hard on, religious, and wealth. God was blessing them because they had wealth. Those people didn't need God, and that's the ones that Jesus had the strongest words for, Danny. So, but when someone breaks down and just is a human being that's in need of God, and experiences the mercy of Genesis 3, like when I say that, when I say the mercy of Genesis 3, you go back, it's this. It's that man and woman in the garden did not think they needed him, God. So when God begins to talk about the consequences of that, he curses the serpent. Check this out. Then he promises a savior in Genesis 3, if you read that. Then he describes the consequences for the man and the woman after that. He never curses the man and he never curses the woman. He does tell them that life is not going to work for them anymore. Now what's happening there? In his mercy, he's showing the man and the woman that they do need him. And it will be merciful if that independent, proud, arrogant, not needy man or woman find themselves on their knees again, crying out to a God who they can find life with. And if they find themselves on their knees again, crying out to him, that's mercy. And what we see through the rest from Genesis 3 all the way to Revelation is man and woman trying to find life apart from God and coming back and forth, back and forth. But in the end, it's the fact that life doesn't work that draws us back to our need of God. That's mercy. So really all we have to bring to him is need.
Jeff Schulte, consummate teacher, distilling biblical truths amidst the reality of men and sex. Articulate, passionate, but you know, the foundation of it all, you speak out of your heart, out of the genuineness of your life, the authenticity comes through. And we need more of that and more of each other to bring about more health in our married lives, in our lives in general. So, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today and again, speaking so openly from your heart. I really appreciate you, Jeff. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about another hot topic, a subject that affects all of us, but also some solutions to a problem, but solutions to homelessness. Homelessness in Hawaii, how does it affect our society? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Shiro.
The fact that there are business owners who care enough about our community to bring God's hope to people is one of the greatest gifts to society. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show appreciates their generous financial support.
The Good Life Radio Show is a ministry that has a family of financial supporters. Grateful for their generosity, Danny Yamashiro and the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show would like to thank Wahiwa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, A1A electrician Tony Lathrop Lee of State Farm Mililani, HMC Karaoke, Birch Union Service Station on School Street, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Michael Beasley of Kiani, Realtor Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, and Chinnan and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated. To learn more about our sponsors and further sponsorship opportunities, visit thegoodlifehawaii.org.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Waiahua. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Waiahua, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out? Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created. Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guests.
Welcome back to our show. One of the finest things in Hawaii today is the Hawaiian Islands Ministries conference here at the Hawaii Convention Center, and part of the reason for it is we have world-class communicators that come in their very niche area, their sweet spot of life and ministry and passion, to speak about the things that matter not only most to them but most to us too. I mean, it impacts all of us in our society. You know, today, homelessness is one of the significant problems in society, for any community. But there are also solutions to homelessness. Vicar General and moderator of Curia of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Honolulu, this was Mark Alexander, 2006 to 2010. Mark stepped down earlier this year to serve as coordinator on homelessness for Hawaii under Governor Neil Abercrombie. Mark also served as pastor of St. Pius X and Sacred Heart Parishes, as well as to Maranol School in Honolulu, Hawaii. He was the diocesan theologian from 1993 to 2010 and founding executive director of the Hawaii Catholic Conference, the public policy arm for the Roman Catholic Church in Hawaii, which organized for the successful passage of a constitutional amendment, successfully lobbying for legislation for affordable housing and the reduction of domestic violence. Mark holds a doctorate in sacred theology from Gregorian University in Rome, Italy, a license in sacred theology, a Master of Arts in Religious Studies, a Bachelor of Sacred Theology from the Catholic University in Louvain. The homeless, a community problem, a community solution, is a matter deep on his heart, and Mark Alexander is with us today. Mark, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much, Danny. It's great to be here with you and all of our listeners.
Tell us, you know, people in Hawaii, we like to know somebody's background. You know, where did they grow up? Where did they go to school? We sort of connect, you know, in Hawaii with that. We make a general profile instantly like that, you know. But anyway, tell us, where did you grow up, Mark?
Well, I was born in Japan, and my parents, when I was very young, they moved to the United States. My father was from Chicago. My mother was a Japanese national. They met in Japan. So we first settled in the state of Washington, where my sister was born. And then because they had a mixed background, my father was Jewish, my mother was Japanese, Shinto at the time, they moved to Hawaii because of, you know, our wonderful environment that we have here, the great respect for diversity and mm-hmm. cultural diversity, religious diversity. So they moved here, and this is where I grew up. I mean, I came here at a very young age. And when I was about five, my sister and myself, my parents, we were all baptized Roman Catholic in mm-hmm. Kailua. So this is where I spent my childhood, you know, went to St. Anthony's Kailua, Damien High School for 2 years, and then we moved to the Washington, D.C. area.
So you just connected with a whole lot of people when you said Damien High School.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I know, the first thing us locals we like to do, right, is, hey, what school you went to? We don't mean college.
You're right, we don't mean college. Probably the only place in the United States like that.
That's for sure.
Tell us, Mark, about your journey of faith.
Well, I grew up, as I said, in a family of converts, and I think the thing about growing up in a family of converts, you know, my father had been married before, this was the second marriage, and the faith life was very important to their life, as our life as family, and what we did. And so Catholicism was very important to us, and has always been, and continues to be very important to me personally. Mm-hmm. And so because the faith, I think, for them, they chose it as adults, made a real difference in the way they led their lives in terms of the emphasis on family, support of the community, involvement in the community, that certainly had a lasting impact on me. Certainly, when I got older, I wanted to proclaim the gospel, and that's what led me eventually to the priesthood, and then eventually I felt a call in a different direction, a different kind of ministry, mm-hmm. Which is what has led me now to embrace this call to address a very particular kind of issue that touches us here in the state, homelessness.
So take us back, you know, how did this happen, you know, where you felt God lead you into this very specific mission that you have today?
Well, I think having served as a priest for 25 years in various kinds of ministry, I think I got to a point where, you know, over a number of years I'd been thinking about the next 25 years, and I just felt that there are a couple of things happening, you know, in myself personally, and I think in our community. I think one of the dynamics in our community is that more and more, and we see this on the mainland especially, is people who don't agree on everything fight with each other, and it causes great division in communities. And I certainly did not want to see that happen to us here in Hawaii, because mm-hmm. I believe Hawaii is a very special place. And one of the things that makes it very special is the richness of culture and language, the richness of food and expression that we have here.
Yes.
And the fact that when we disagree with each other, we do it with a great amount of civility and respect. And I think at times we can get influenced too much by some of the divisive attitudes on the mainland. And I think, you know, we've had some very hot issues touch us here in the state. And I think also we face some really serious challenges. And more than ever now, we need to be united as a state on the things that are really important to our people. Things like, you know, jobs, the economy, I think issues like homelessness and poverty. Mm-hmm. These are things we all agree on. And I think it's important, whether we're Republicans or Democrats, whether we're green or, you know, libertarians, that mm-hmm. we unite. The other thing I feel very strongly, too, as well, is I think people need to be politically active and involved and very strong in their values, as I continue to be and am. But when we have elected officials in office, we need to get behind them.
Yes.
You know, and I think, again, as a nation, we need to get behind our president. I don't agree with him on everything. I don't agree with myself on everything. Mm. That's part of being human, I think, mm-hmm. and thoughtful. But he's our president. We need to get behind him and wish him success, pray for his success, and help him be successful. I think the same thing applies to, you know, our city and counties and our state. You know, we need to get behind our governor. We face very challenging times, and we need to be united.
You know, it's a rare moment, really, to have someone of your stature and background, Mark, to be able to come forward and articulate and help us process some of the needs that exist. We might identify them, but how do we process them to the place of potential solutions, practical applications to bring about positive change? When we come back from our break, we're going to talk more specifically with Mark Alexander about homelessness and how is it a problem in our community. But you know, whenever you identify a problem, a whole bunch of people can point at it and say, that's a problem. Very few people, the rare ones, will find a solution or multiple solutions. We have one with us today. Mark Alexander is our guest. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more on these very hot and special topics. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky. Leave it to me. I'll lead you home.
On a dark winter night at Hawaii's Pali Ridge, Danny Yamashiro's life was forever changed as he fell 300 feet off a cliff, attempting to rescue his girlfriend. With a fractured skull, torn scalp, a shattered ankle, and smashed body, he fell again, another 100 feet. No one thought he would live. Danny's book, Paradise Calls, is a spellbinding story of survival and hope. A firsthand account of crushed dreams, recovery, and renewed faith to bring Christ's message of hope to people everywhere. Here's Danny.
As you read Paradise Calls, may God bless you and enrich your life with divine hope in the midst of whatever challenge you face today.
Danny Yamashiro can also be heard on the Good Life Radio Show at 2 p.m. on the new KGU 99.5 FM and on AM 760 KGU. Visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. And remember to get Paradise Calls by Danny Yamashiro, available at bookstores throughout Hawaii. For more information, visit Danny online at thegoodlifehawaii.org.
Have you been blessed by the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show? Have the stories been an inspiration to you? What if you had the opportunity to improve the quality of another person's life, someone like your family member or friend? Danny Yamashiro is looking for friends of the Good Life to prayerfully consider a monthly financial gift. You will receive monthly letters from Danny that will equip and encourage you. I invite you to become a financial partner with Danny Yamashiro Ministries. With your gift, you will become part of Danny's ministry team and help reach more people with God's love and hope through Jesus Christ. Write your check to Danny Yamashiro Ministries and mail it to P.O. Box 700998 Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. That's Danny Yamashiro Ministries, P.O. Box 700998, Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. Or go to www.dannyyamashiro.org.
To The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guests.
Welcome back to our show. I'm here with our featured guest today, Mark Alexander. Mark Alexander is serving as the coordinator on homelessness for Hawaii under Governor Neil Abercrombie. This subject, you know, we drive around, we see, depending where you go in Hawaii, some places are more, they're more prominent, but you see homelessness, whether it's a tent that's erected or a number of tents that are there. But I don't even think that it's just the tents or the tent cities. I mean, some people are living, you know, out of their cars or on the streets. And Mark, you're here. What? Tell us, you know, about homelessness here in Hawaii?
Sure. Let me give you a statewide snapshot. First of all, according to our statistics, every day there are about 6,000 people throughout the entire state that are homeless. They may be in shelters or they may be in their cars or living in tents, but they are homeless. They don't have a real home in which to lay their bed and their head. So that's every night. We know statewide, according to our homeless utilization studies that have been taking place for about really the past 5+ years, that there are about 15,000 people that are homeless every year that are served by our various shelters and outreach services. And it's actually our rate per 100,000 people is about double the national average. So homelessness is a serious issue here in Hawaii. We just did a point-in-time count in January, and again, the stats, which haven't been fully analyzed and released yet, seem to indicate, again, the same, you know, depth and width in terms of the problem.
Why is it a problem?
Well, there are multiple reasons, you know, why homelessness is a problem. The chief one, quite frankly, is that housing is very unaffordable here in the state of Hawaii. Our housing prices are the highest, you know, of any state. I mean, they're just out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And our incomes certainly do not keep up with the cost of housing. And when you look at housing, the cost of housing for those on the low end, those, you know, 30% of median income and below, I mean, there's just no way they can make it. And then what happens is, not only do we have the homeless, because affordable housing is hard to find, but we have a lot of the invisible homeless. You know, we estimate 90,000 to 100,000 people in this state easily are on the verge of homelessness. That means they're packed in tight, or they're one or two paychecks away from not being able to pay the rent. And so this lack of affordable housing is a huge issue here in the state.
What are some of the implications?
Well, I think, first
of all,
things don't change. Well, things don't change, then, you know, the rate of homelessness will increase and the amount of family stress attendant with that will continue to increase. And everything that goes with that, domestic violence, divorce, all kinds of things happen when people have financial strain, when they don't have stable housing. It increases drug addiction. It increases alcohol abuse. I mean, all these kind of social ills really are, in one way or another, impacted by poverty, by lack of affordable housing. Now, one of the things, too, that's happened over the past 5 to 10 years is the face of homelessness has changed. You know, I think a lot of people have the stereotype that the typical homeless person is a single male who does drugs and alcohol. And that's just not accurate. More and more of our homeless are families. More and more of our homeless are children. More and more of our homeless are people who have jobs but cannot afford decent housing, and they live in their van, they live in their car. So the face of homelessness has changed drastically.
You articulated so well, but now, like we said before, I mean, we can have a bunch of people that can say there's a problem.
Right.
It's a very much of a surface kind of way of handling something. You just, yeah, it's easy. Yeah, there's a problem, there's a problem.
And go solve it.
Yeah, you place it on somebody else.
Right.
If that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it's a rare occasion. It's a rare bird, so to speak, when there's someone who says, okay, that's a problem, let's go do something about it.
Well, there are a couple of things I think that have come together. First of all, our president last year actually commissioned for the very first time a national plan to end homelessness. It's called Opening Doors. And a lot of people really haven't even heard about the plan. It was put together by the Interagency Council on Homelessness, which existed for a number of years. But this is the first national plan. And the goal is to end homelessness in 10 years. And the first year, their emphasis was on veterans. The second year, it's on children and families in 2011. That's the first thing that makes this whole issue, I think, very different. We got a president who said, look, this is a national scandal. We've got to do something. And now with our governor, a new governor elected to office, he has made homelessness one of the things that he said has got to be eliminated. It's a, as he said, to use his expression, a social sin. It's a scandal. He doesn't want to be the governor of a state where we have so many homeless people, homeless children and women and men, people who are in need of help, not getting help. And so that's why he has, for the first time, you know, appointed a coordinator on homelessness for the entire state. Because if we're going to tackle this problem, he has made it very clear. We can't be pointing fingers at each other, you know, pointing it to, you know, the city and counties or pointing to the state or the nonprofits or the churches or the homeless themselves. Instead, we've got to say, look, We're a community. This is our dilemma, our challenge, and we got to solve it together. And I think, you know, his new day in regard to homelessness is to say, let's get it together.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mayors have bought into this as well. They all agree we need to tackle this. You know, it's going to take time, but we need to tackle it as a community.
So if we push ourselves towards brass tacks, mm-hmm. The practical applications of some of these solutions, what would they be, Mark?
Well, I think first off, I officially started March 2nd. And one of the first things that I'm working on with a team of people right now, I've attended dozens of meetings listening, is we have to recognize there's a lot of good stuff being done on homelessness. You know, the fact that our homeless numbers have remained flat over the past few years, and again, it looks like 2011 isn't going to be that much different than 2010, indicates we're doing a lot of work because one would expect it to have gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of good services being done by our nonprofits, stuff being done by our state agencies. I mean, a lot of people have come together in our churches to try to stem this. So we want to affirm that good stuff that's going on. The first major thing we're working on right now is a 90-day relief plan. I got an idea from a colleague of mine. It's kind of like the New Deal approach. You have three stages: relief, recovery, and reform. We've got to do some stuff on the immediate front end, then we've got the intermediate, and then we've got to do the significant planning.
Okay.
And so we're working on this 90-day plan, which the goal is to provide some measurable benefit to the people, to the homeless, and to the larger community on this issue. And we believe that we can do that by targeting and by being very specific in the kinds of actions that we want to take. So we're working on that plan right now. And then what will in the long run happen is the interagency state council that will be formed either by the executive order of the governor or the state legislature. There's a bill moving through the state legislature right now to form this interagency state council, which is the model that all states are encouraged to embrace. This interagency group council will help to formulate a state plan to end homelessness in 10 years. Now, we've had other plans in the past. The latest one was 09. So this one will be different in the sense of it'll be a high-level interagency group that's participating, take advantage of the resources and the guidance of the National Interagency Council.
Is it a modification of the past plan? Or
it'll probably
it
be very, very different than the last plan in one sense in terms of how it's laid out and the specification of the goals. But we want to build on the excellent work that has been done and continues to be done. It's not a matter of recreating the wheel.
Yes.
That's why it's a coordinating position. As I said, there's a lot of good stuff going on. We just want to make sure that we're ending duplication, that we've got good stewardship of our resources, accountability pieces in place, metrics, measurements for success that are in place.
Now, on the ground,
mm-hmm.
what hope is there? I mean, we're offering, in this show, we're always talking about hope in times of crisis. So on the ground, let's say someone who is homeless or on the verge of homelessness, you know, breathing a wind of hope into their soul,
sure.
So to speak. What could they look forward to?
A number of things, very practically. Number one is the entire state's emphasis is clearly moving towards housing first. Housing first is a certain philosophy which says get people housed and then provide supportive services to address the problems that they have, whether it's drug addiction or alcohol addiction. And the city and county of Honolulu, for example, the state, were very much in one in this emphasis, as are the other counties as well. We want to house people. The idea is that we want to provide permanent, stable housing for people. And we do this in a number of ways. We have landlord-tenant programs and vouchers so that we get people placed in different houses, rental opportunities, working with the landlord so they feel comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and working with the tenants so that they are good tenants. This program has worked very successfully, hundreds of vouchers that go out every month to help people in this area. So that's one of the, I think, dynamics. I think the second dynamic, too, is we want to make sure that our shelters that we have in place, that we strengthen them and we augment them. Like some of them, you know, need maybe some additional tweaking in terms of the facility so they can be at better capacity, that they are open during the day. So we're really looking carefully at that. And I think the big thing is making sure that our service providers, you know, continue to reach out to those who are homeless to encourage them to take advantage of the services. you know, working in some of the areas where we've cleaned up, prior to all those cleanups in Kaka'ako, Keao, our service providers for several weeks working closely with the city and the county and the state went out to those people and encouraged them to take advantage of services. And a number of them really did, and that was very helpful, especially some of the families.
How is it on the neighbor islands?
Homelessness is a problem on the neighbor islands. It doesn't have the numbers that it does here on Oahu. And some of our islands are doing a very excellent job, I think, in addressing it. The Big Island, you know, has opened up some new shelters, for example. Maui has a kind of housing first project that's going up over there. I think Kauai has introduced the idea of having, you know, an area where vehicles can park overnight. We're waiting to see how that works when they actually implement it. Our counties, I think, are working very hard. The governor had a forum on March 2nd, in which he brought together the top leadership of the state. A couple of the neighbor island mayors, they came in themselves for that, and the others sent representatives. And basically coming together to say, hey, we're going to address this issue, we're going to do it together. Here are the things we're doing that work. Here are the areas that we need help with.
You know, Mark, you have come at this in a time of distress, in a time of despair, where people are faced with insurmountable challenges and are overwhelmed. It takes a leader with the courage as that of a lion to stand up and to take charge, but also in such a way that is collaborative, interactive, and bringing forth a synergism that can incorporate so many existing programs that are already here and put it all together. And Mark, you're a called man, you're a God's man, and a man for the hour, a man for our time. And it really means a lot, you coming here, articulating some of the issues and concerns of homelessness. We realize there's so much more. We're just touching the very, very highest tip of the iceberg, but you're working at it and you're doing it. So Mark, thank you so much for being with us and sharing so clearly the statistics and backgrounds of the problem and the solutions for homelessness.
Thank you, Danny.
In the next few days, you're going to hear more gripping stories like this. Go ahead and visit us at thegoodlifehawaii.org. It's always a blessing to be with you. A special thank you to our guest today, Mark Alexander, along with Sue Miller, Ed Brackenberry, and Jeff Schulte. Until next time, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let Him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org. And may God richly bless you with The Good Life.